Chapter 12. I succeeded in sleeping till daybreak, through a reflex of defence against the incursion of thoughts that were too unbearable. My sleep was interrupted, however, by feverish nightmares, in which Nova's body appeared in the guise of that of a monstrous serpent, which was wound round my own. I opened my eyes to the light. She was already awake. She had drawn a little away from me, and was watching me with her eternally bewildered gaze. Our vehicle slowed down, and I saw we were entering a town. The captives had got up, and were squatting beside the bars, glancing out beneath the tarpaulin, at a spectacle which appeared to revive their emotion of the previous day. I followed their example. I pressed my face against the bars, and for the first time contemplated a civilized city on the planet Soror. We were driving down a fairly broad street, flanked with pavements. I anxiously examined the passers-by. They were monkeys. I saw a tradesman, a sort of grocer, who had just raised the shutters of his shop, turn round in curiosity to watch us go by. He was a monkey. I tried to discern the passengers and drivers of the motor cars flashing past us. They were dressed in the same way as people at home, and they were monkeys. My hope of discovering a civilized human race became chimerical, and I spent the last stage of the drive in gloomy despair. Our cart slowed down even more. I then noticed that the convoy had been split up during the night, for it consisted of only two vehicles, the others having evidently taken another direction. After passing through an entrance gate, we came to a halt in a courtyard. Some monkeys forthwith surrounded us, and tried to calm down the captives' mounting agitation with a few blows of their pikes. The courtyard was surrounded by buildings several stories high, with identical rows of windows. The general effect was that of a hospital, and this impression was confirmed by the arrival of some new figures who came forward to meet our guards. They were all dressed in white smocks and little caps. They were monkeys. They were monkeys, every one of them, gorillas and chimpanzees. They helped our guards unload the carts. We were taken out of the cages one by one, stuffed into big sacks and carried inside the building. I put up no resistance, and let myself be hauled off by two gorillas dressed in white. For several minutes I had the feeling that we were going down some long corridors and climbing some staircases. Eventually I was dumped down on the ground, then, after the sack had been opened, thrown into another cage. This time a stationary one, with a floor covered with straw bedding, and in which I was alone. One of the gorillas carefully locked the door from the outside. The room in which I found myself contained a large number of cages like mine, lined up in two rows and giving onto a long passage. Most of them were already occupied, some of them by my companions of the roundup who had just been brought here, others by men and women who must have been captured some time ago. The latter could be recognized by their attitude of resignation. They looked at the newcomers with a listless air, scarcely pricking up their ears when one of them gave a plaintive moan. I also noticed that the newcomers had been placed, as I had, in individual cells, whereas the old hands were generally locked up in pairs. Putting my nose through the bars, I saw a bigger cage at the end of the corridor, containing a large number of children. Unlike the adults, these appeared to be extremely excited by the arrival of our batch. They gesticulated, jostled one another, and pretended to shake the bars, uttering little cries like young monkeys quarrelling. The two gorillas came back carrying another sack. My friend Nova emerged from it, and again I had the consolation of seeing her put into the cage exactly opposite mine. She protested against this operation in her own manner, trying to scratch and bite. When the door was closed on her, she rushed to the bars, tried to break them down, grinding her teeth and whimpering in a heartbreaking way. After a few minutes of this behaviour, she caught sight of me, stood stock still, and extended her neck slightly like a surprised animal. I gave her a cautious half-smile and a little wave, which, to my intense delight, she clumsily tried to imitate. I was distracted by the return of the two gorillas in white jackets. The unloading had been completed, for they carried no further bundle. But they pushed in front of them a trolley laden with food and buckets of water, which they doled out to the captives, thus restoring order among them. It was soon my turn. While one of the gorillas mounted guard, the other entered my cage and placed in front of me a bowl containing some mash, a little fruit, and a bucket. I had decided to do all I could to establish contact with these monkeys, who seemed to be the only rational and civilized beings on the planet. The one who brought my food did not look unpleasant. Observing my tranquility, he even gave me a friendly tap on the shoulder. I looked him straight in the eye, then, putting my hand on my chest, gave a ceremonious bow. I saw an intense surprise in his face as I raised my head again. I then smiled at him, putting all my heart into this manifestation. He was just about to leave. He stopped short, dumbfounded, and uttered an exclamation. I had at last succeeded in attracting attention to myself. Wishing to confirm my success by displaying all my capacities, I uttered, rather stupidly, the first phrase that came into my head. "How do you do? I am a man from Earth. I've had a long journey." The meaning was unimportant. I only needed to speak in order to reveal my true nature to him. I had certainly achieved my aim. Never before had such stupefaction been seen on a monkey's face. He stood, breathless and gaping, and so did his companion. They both started talking together in an undertone. But the result was not what I had envisaged. After peering at me suspiciously, the gorilla briskly drew back and stepped out of the cage, which he closed behind him with even greater care than before. The two apes then looked at each other for a moment and began roaring with laughter. I must have represented a truly unique phenomenon, for they could not stop making merry at my expense. Tears were streaming down their faces, and one of them had to put down the bowl he was holding to take out his handkerchief. My disappointment was such that I immediately broke into a towering rage. I too began shaking the bars, baring my teeth, and cursing them in every language I knew. When I had exhausted my repertoire of invectives, I went on giving incoherent yells, with the only result that they shrugged their shoulders. All the same, I had succeeded in attracting their attention. As they went off, they turned round several times to look at me. When I had finally calmed down, at the end of my strength, I saw one of them take a notebook from his pocket and scribble something in it after carefully recording a sign inscribed on a panel at the top of my cage, which I assumed to be a number. They disappeared. Agitated at first by my demonstration, the other captives had since resumed their meal. There was nothing else I could do but eat and rest, while waiting for a more favorable opportunity to reveal my noble essence. I gulped down another mash of cereals and some delicious fruit. Opposite me, Nova stopped munching every now and then to dart a furtive glance in my direction.